the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Everyone should know by now that the tax laws for 2018 have changed. If you're an employee of a company, you've probably already noticed the change in your paycheck starting in February when withholding adjustments were made to reflect the new tax rates because the tax rates have been lowered. But in addition, there were other changes out there. The new tax laws removed a lot of the itemized deductions and got rid of the personal exemptions and made owning a home less of a tax advantage. So if you're talking about using taxes as a part of a retirement strategy, where do you start with the new laws?
You know, it's really important when you talk about tax planning, one of the most important numbers that you're going to need to know. And when we talk about retirement planning, everybody starts talking about what's your number? How much do you need to have to accumulate to retire tax-free? When it comes to taxes, there's another number, and it's called your marginal tax bracket. And why that is important, it's important because it means the next dollar of income you get, let's say you get a cost of living raise, or let's say you get a year-end bonus, or you make some extra income, capital gains. It's what your next dollar of income is going to be taxed at. And for many of you that live in states that have high tax brackets, that's a disadvantage now under the new tax laws because state taxes aren't deductible anymore. But you have two marginal tax brackets. If you live in a state that has income taxes, you have a marginal tax bracket. So you need to know what the marginal tax bracket is combined for both your federal and your state. There's another level of income that you also need to know about. And this is, you know, John, they kept saying they were going to simplify the tax bill. They've just made more work for accountants because there's something else that was still left in place because they didn't repeal Obamacare. And there's an additional 3.8% tax that goes into effect on dividends, capital gains, interest income, rents, annuity income, you name it, once you reach a certain level. And it's not indexed to inflation. So there's a number of categories, brackets that you need to be aware of when you're doing tax planning. Now, let's kind of show you where we've gone in just 1 year. And I'm going to start with single individuals. There's seven tax brackets if you're filing your 2017 return, and there's also seven tax brackets in 2018. Originally, they said they were going to simplify, and it was just going to be three tax brackets. I think it was going to be 10, 15, 25, whatever it is. Well, as we know, that's not the way it turned out. In fact, the majority of the tax bill, 75% of it, went to make corporations more competitive, with about 25, maybe a third of the tax bill going to individuals. In 2017, the first $9,300 was taxed at 10%. Then it jumps to 15% after $9,300 up to, and I'm just going to round these numbers off, but you'll get an idea of where we're going, from about $9,300 to about $38,000. Then you go up to a 25% bracket, a big jump, starting at $37,951 all the way to roughly $92,000. Then there's a small incremental tax bracket of 28% that goes from, and this is going to be key as we talk about some of these brackets for 2018, from about $92,000 to about $192,000, you're in the 28% bracket if you're single. A 33% bracket starts at $191,650 and goes all the way to $416,700. And this is kind of a joke if you're single. There's an additional 2% bracket. It's called the 35% bracket, but it only applies to roughly about $2,000 of your income, $4,016,701 to $418,400. I don't even know why they threw that in there. Then if you're single, anything over $418,400, you're taxed at 39.6. Now that applies if you're filing your 2017, that applies for 2017. All right, they rejiggered this. And if you're in the middle class, you've got some wonderful breaks here. If you're in the upper income category, Not so good. Let me explain why. In 2018, if you're single, the 10% bracket is on the first $9,525. Instead of jumping to 15%, there's a 12% bracket that goes from $9,526 to $38,700. So you're paying taxes. The tax rate there is 3% lower. Now, remember, these are progressive tax rates. So what that means is the first $9,500 is taxed at 10%. Roughly the next almost $30,000 is taxed at 12%. Now, under the old system, it jumped from 15 to 25. Under the new system, it jumps from 12 to 22. And on a single individual, that is $38,700 to $82,500. And then instead of jumping to 28, there's a 24% bracket that goes from $82,500 until roughly $158,000. Now, here is where they get you in the upper income category. Under the old system, the 33% bracket was between $191,000 and $418,000. Under the new system, it's a 32% bracket, but it only goes for about $43,000. It goes from $157,000 to $200,000. Then it jumps to a 35% bracket. Now, under the old system, you only had $2,000 that was taxed at 35%. Under the new system, you have $300,000 that's taxed at 35%. So, you know, when they said that, you know, this is a giveaway to the rich, not so fast. If you're in the upper income categories, you're going to have more of your income taxed at the 32 and the 35% bracket than you did under the old system. Because remember, under the old system, you were in a 33% bracket all the way up to almost $418,000. You jump into that 35% bracket now, not on a $416,000, you jump into that bracket as soon as you hit $200,000. Above $500,000, you jump to the 37% bracket. So there's a cut there from 37 to 39. Now let's look at the married couple. 2017, the first $18,650 taxed at 10%. And why these brackets are going to be important, because this gets very complicated. You not only have certain brackets that you pay a marginal tax rate on, you have a certain level of income on which you pay an Obamacare tax. And then you also have a different level of income when it applies to dividends and capital gains.
You know, as I'm listening to you say that, well, I remember they said they were going to simplify this. I don't think that happened.
No, this actually has become more complex. So let's go to the married brackets and why I want to talk about these brackets, because if you are in the upper income levels, your taxes are going to go up. And I'm going to tell you why here in just a moment. And then I'm going to also talk about if you're retired, how this is an opportunity to pay zero tax on dividends and capital gains. Now, let's go to the married couples. 10% bracket for 2017 was $18,650. From $18,651 to about roughly $76,000, you jump to a 15% bracket. At $75,901 to $153,100, you're in a 25% bracket. $153,000 to $233,350, you're 28. A 33% bracket was $233,351 to $416,700. So there's almost a couple hundred thousand there that's taxed at 33. The 35% bracket for married couples is a lot better than single. It goes from $416,701 to $470,000. Above $470,000, you go to 39.6. So the reason these brackets are important now, because there's so many brackets, and this really applies to married couples that retire. And we'll talk about the widow's penalty here in just a moment. Now let's take a look at 2018. The first $19,050 is taxed at 10%. At 12%, it runs from $19,000 to $77,400. From $77,401 to $165,000, you're in a 22% bracket. The 24% bracket goes from $165,000 to $315,000. and the 32% bracket goes from 315 to 400. So the married couple really gets taxed less than the single individual when it comes to those upper income brackets. At 35% is from 400 to roughly 600. And so you got a 200,000 spread there that you're taxed at that 35% bracket. And at 37% is anything over 600,000. Okay. So those are the marginal income tax brackets. Now let's throw in another category you need to worry about. And if you make $200,000, if you're single, you pay an additional 3.8% tax on dividends, interest, rents, annuities, and capital gains. If you are married, that 3.8% bracket kicks in at $250,000. That is not indexed to inflation. They have not gotten rid of this. They did get rid of the penalty that people paid if you didn't have, let's say, if you didn't have medical insurance and you didn't have the government's Obamacare. They got rid of that, but they did not get rid of this Obamacare tax. There's also, this is the level of which you pay an additional 0.9% on Medicare taxes, because once you reach the level where you no longer pay Social Security tax, you do pay a Medicare tax. And once you reach a certain level, the 200 and the 250, you pay an additional 0.9% on your income on Medicare tax. Now, here is where the opportunity is. Let's talk about capital gains taxes and dividend taxes. When I'm talking about capital gains, I'm talking about long-term capital gains. That means that you own an asset for at least over a year. Anything underneath a year, you're taxed at your ordinary income brackets. Now, here's the thing that's kind of exciting, because if you are in a 0 to 25% tax bracket, so that would be in 2018, if you're single, it would be on a tax bracket up to roughly about $157,500. You pay zero capital gains tax. If you are in a 25 to 39.6% bracket, you pay 15%. Now, this is for 2017. And then if you're in a 39.6% bracket, you pay a 20% capital gains tax on dividends and capital gains. Now, here's where it can get very cost efficient for you if you are retired. If you are single, you are in a 0% tax bracket on the first $38,600. If you are married, the first $77,200 of dividends or capital gains are taxed at zero, zip, no tax. If you are single, between $38,600 and $425,800, you only pay a 15% federal tax. But once again, the caveat, you have to throw the Obamacare tax in there if you are single and you make over 200. If you are married, between $77,200 and $479,000, you only pay tax of 15% on capital gains and dividends. So that's real key. The 20% bracket kicks in at $425,801 if you're single, and $479,000 if you are married. Why that is real key. Imagine if you're retired and you are under $77,000, you don't pay tax on your dividends and you don't pay tax on your capital gains. And if you're married, on the first between $77,000 and $479,000, you would only pay 15%. Now, if you're married and you make 250, then you have to add the additional 3.8% tax. So here is a real opportunity for many of you You know, if you listen to the weekend show, you know since 2012, we've been emphasizing dividend-paying stocks. A lot of my guests and experts on the program recommend dividend-paying stocks because you have to have some kind of inflation hedge to pay for those bills as they go up over the years, especially in the latter years. Here's another reason to own dividend-paying stocks, because you can pay anything from zero to 20% tax. For most of you, you're probably going to end up paying either zero on your capital gains and your dividends or 15%. And that certainly beats the 22, 24, 32, 35, and the 37% bracket, which is on ordinary income. Now, I want to talk about something else that kicks in when you're married or single. If you're an individual and you are receiving Social Security, and this applies if you are a widow or widower, from $25,000 and $34,000, that takes your adjusted gross income, any tax-free income, and half your Social Security in this amount, you pay up to 50% of your Social Security is subject to income taxes. Anything over $34,000, if you are single, 85% of your Social Security is subject to income taxes. I know you might have paid way more in it and you're getting back your own money. Doesn't matter. They're still going to tax you if you get that income. If you're married, between $32,000 and $44,000, up to 50% of your Social Security would be subject to federal taxes. Anything over $44,000 is taxed at 85%.
You know what I didn't realize till I just heard you say it there is that if you are under a certain level, you pay zero on capital gains in terms of a percentage.
Yeah. I mean, if you are married, the first $77,200, you're in a 0% tax bracket. And if you're married all the way up to $479,000, you only pay 15% with the addition of 3.8%, which could kick in if you make $250,000. But it's one of the reasons why we like dividend paying stocks or dividend paying mutual funds are so effective when you're doing retirement planning, because they keep you in a zero, or for most people, a 15% tax bracket. And I'm going to talk about why, if you're Larry Lots of Bucks or somebody that has a lot of income and you're fortunate, you know, maybe you have a big pension, you have a deferred comp payout program, you're fortunate enough, you have a large portfolio, why you want to reshape it so you're going to be in that 0 or 15% tax bracket. And it's one of the ways that you can do that. And it's all done legally. It's basically Congress is saying, look, if you make investments and you have capital gains, you have dividends, we like that. And we're going to tax it at a lower rate because, quite honestly, folks, dividends are taxed twice. A corporation makes a profit. The tax rates are now 21% for corporations. They used to be 35. And after a corporation pays that tax, then they distribute the dividend to you, the shareholder. You pay an additional income tax on the dividends you receive. So corporate income is taxed twice, once at the corporate level and then once at the individual level.
All right. If we're targeting the idea of lowering taxable income, any other methods of doing it other than dividends?
The other ways that you can get tax-sheltered income is obviously tax-free municipal bonds could be tax-free at the state level and tax-free for federal purposes. Master limited partnerships, a good majority of the dividend is non-taxable. It's sheltered. Of course, that's less of an advantage today with these lower tax rates. And then, of course, investment in real estate where you can deduct. There is no limitation on interest expense on investment real estate where there is interest limitation on individual real estate, because you used to be able to deduct interest on a $1 million mortgage and $100,000 second mortgage. That has been reduced on new purchases. The old mortgages were grandfathered, but if you're buying a new home, you can only deduct your interest expense on up to $750,000. But on investment real estate, there is no limitation. So other ways that you can get tax sheltered income is tax-free bonds, master limited partnerships, and of course, investment real estate. Another one I want to talk about here, and we ought to do another show on this because we got a lot of response last time we did it, is Roth conversions. Now, many of you are working right now. You're contributing to a 401k program. And most of you, when you end up retiring, you're going to roll that 401k into an IRA rollover. You may want to consider with your advisor, or if you're putting together a retirement plan, of taking a portion of that rollover in a low tax year, let's say the year after you retire, rolling part of it over into a Roth IRA. And the reason you might want to do that is if you keep it there for 5 years, when you take it out, it doesn't matter how much, it's tax free. That's number one. Number two, when you get to age 70 and a half, when you have to take mandatory distributions from your IRA, which is taxed as ordinary income. And remember, those mandatory distributions go up every single year. The older you get, the more the government wants you to take out. That does not apply to a Roth IRA. So you may want to look at Roth IRAs as another way of getting tax-free income. Another way of getting tax-free income is health savings accounts. If you don't have one and you qualify, depending on what kind of plan your company has, you might want to consider a HSA. And of course, if you're working, putting money away in a 401k program, obviously that's a great way. It comes off the top line. It's above the line deduction. We've talked about that in the past. And if you're saving for your kids' education, you should be doing it in a 529 plan so that when the gains, capital gains, interest, and dividends are taken out to pay for your child's college education, it's all tax-free. So Roth IRAs, 529 plans, and HSAs are three ways, besides municipal bonds, that you can get tax-free income. So when you add it all up, there's four ways you can get tax-free income. Municipal bonds, Roth IRA, 529 plans for your college, that is, and HSAs, health savings accounts. So for most retirees, tax-free bonds, Roth IRAs, and HSAs can bring tax-free income and keep you down in that lower bracket. And this is something, when we talk about real estate tomorrow with Paul Horn from Financial Sense Advisors, we're going to talk about how the new tax law has really changed home ownership. It's reduced the mortgage interest expense and the amount that you can have that's tax deductible to $750,000. It used to be $1.1 million, $1 million on a mortgage, $100,000 on a second. It has reduced the property tax deduction to only $10,000. And of course, you've lost the state tax deduction. So a lot of upper income individuals, as we talked about those tax brackets, are going to get hit pretty hard in those upper brackets when you get up to that 32% and 35% bracket, especially if you've lost your state tax deduction, you've lost part of your property tax deduction, you've lost your miscellaneous deductions, you've lost property and casualty deductions, you still have the medical deduction if it exceeds 10% of your adjusted gross income. So these are things that you really should be talking with your financial advisor, if you are getting 5-10 years away from retirement, and why that's important. The more money that you save on taxes, if you're trying to put away money for your retirement, that's more dollars that you can set aside, put aside, that will accumulate for your own retirement. And then if you are retired, the more that you can make your income taxed at a lower bracket, obviously that's putting more money in your pocket.
One of the things that's really poised to catch a lot of people, I think, many people may not realize that this bill regrouped a lot of single individuals into higher tax brackets, especially the 32 and 35% brackets. So it's taxing you at a higher rate, and they've removed a lot of the deductions that you can use to offset that.
Yeah, not only the deductions, but the exemptions. And that's why, like with a lot of our clients, if you are a wealthy individual, you should only have five kinds of investments. Investment real estate, which can be sheltered, dividend paying stocks, which could be taxed at anything from 0 to 20%, municipal bonds, Roth IRAs, and health savings accounts. Three of those, munis, Roths, and HSAs, are tax-free. Dividend stocks can be taxed at 0 to 15% for most individuals. And of course, real estate is taxed at a lower bracket. I'm always amazed, and we see this with a lot of our corporate executives, their upper incomes, and then they get these giant bonuses sometimes, performance bonuses. And I'm absolutely amazed to see them investing in things like bank CDs, money market funds, and things like that, that are taxed at their highest marginal tax bracket, which is for 2017, it was 39.6. And for 2018, it's 37%. Throw in the state taxes on top of that. And many of you that are in that upper income category, you're paying over 50% on your investment income. So you may want to consider talking to a qualified advisor and talk about converting that to real estate, dividend stocks, munis, Roths, or a health savings account where you're going to get tax-free income or tax-sheltered income or income that's taxed at a lower bracket.
One of the bright points there in this new tax law is that it removed the estate taxes for the majority of Americans, unless you're really talking about people who have large estates.
Yeah, and it also changes the kind of trust that people are using because, you know, the exemption used to be about $4,450,000 before this law came into effect. And for a while, it was only $3 million. So a lot of people put in what we call an AB trust, which would allow you to double the exemption if you're married. Well, today, the exemption is $11 million. You do not need an AB trust, and it is totally inappropriate unless you're trying to shelter income for it to protect a spouse or something. And there's another way to do that. So a lot of these AB trusts are no longer appropriate because, you know, $11 million, you know, there's not too many people that have $11 million estate. And if you're married, you know, if you do have a lot of dollars, well, then the AB trust is appropriate because you can double that exemption to $22 million. But for a lot of individuals, you have outdated trust out there that are going to create a lot of headaches and paperwork that are unnecessary. In other words, there's no reason to split the trust in two when one spouse passes away because there's no longer, for most of you, under $11 million, there's not going to be any estate tax.
You know, but I'm always suspicious of what Congress critters do, and that's born of a lot of experience. Sometimes they say, look, we're giving you all this stuff, and over on the other side, they're quietly taking it away, and unless, you know, that's why things are so complex, you can't figure it through. Or, all right, they lower the rates right now, take away the deductions. Remember, this happened under Reagan, okay? They lower everything and then take away the deductions, and then 2 years later, whoop, the rates go right back up, and now you don't have deductions.
Yep. And there was not one Democrat that voted for this tax cut, and they don't like it. And so the real risk here is that the Republicans lose the White House in 2020. We could be looking at higher taxes again. And this time we've lost all the itemized deductions. If we get close to that, and if that is going to happen, you may want to consider doing something called an irrevocable trust where you, while the exemption is still there, you take $11 million, put it into an irrevocable trust and get it out of your estate. So it's really, you know, the point that we're trying to make here is it's really important to take tax efficiency when you're doing your investment planning and saving for retirement. Because I just mentioned, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have tax-free income, either tax-free bonds, a Roth IRA, or a health savings account, or for that matter, have dividends that are taxed at 0% or maybe as low as 15% versus these higher tax brackets. And it's why when you're planning for retirement, tax planning should be part of it because, man, there's three different brackets we need to know about. There's one bracket, set of brackets for capital gains and dividends. There's another set, another bracket for the Obamacare tax and the Medicare tax. And then you have your regular marginal income tax bracket. So you have three brackets you have to look at when you're doing investment and retirement planning. It's gotten more complex, and I imagine it'll get more complex because remember, the wealthiest neighborhood in the country is Washington, D.C., because it's full of lobbyists, and they make their living by putting in all these little perks and little complications that create all these benefits for one group over another or one particular business group or a particular interest, and that's how Congress runs. You give them money to their campaign, and they put in special laws that benefit you and pay you back. So it's gotten a lot more complex, John, and it does take a lot more sophisticated planning today. But the good news is you can lower your taxes legally, which is the point of today's show.
Coming up on the program tomorrow, Paul Horn from Financial Sense Advisors looking at real estate investment from a retirement perspective, and time for the real life case study, which we feature every week here on the program, which is an hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed, and we do provide slides, PowerPoint, whatever you want to call it, online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points being made.
All right, this week we're going to talk about Lucas and Anna Mueller. Both are age 47. They both want to retire at age 65. Lucas' life expectancy is 88. Anna's about 92, the difference between a man and a female. Risk tolerance, moderately aggressive. They kind of remember what happened in 2008, so they toned down the risk level a bit. In retirement, they want to get more conservative, but right now we've got a good almost two decades away. Lucas is a software engineer. He's been working for the same company since college. Up to this point, he's managed all his own investments, but he's becoming increasingly concerned about market conditions, and especially with the Fed rate raising cycle. He wants help from a professional advisor. He's kind of an aggressive buy and hold guy. He likes to buy growth stocks and just sit on them and not pay any taxes. But he's got large exposures to small cap and emerging market stocks. He's concerned about taxes after he got a big promotion and raise at work, which boosted their income substantially. Anna is a school psychologist. She's looking to help manage their finances, especially college planning, since they have two children in high school. Their oldest will start college in the fall, and she's concerned about their ability to pay and meanwhile keep up their savings for retirement, which, you know, they both want to retire at age 65. It's really going to be for them age 67 for full Social Security benefits, given where their ages are now. What was really surprising is Lucas considered himself to be a very aggressive investor, but we put him through our risk assessment program, which is very sophisticated. It takes a look at individual investments, what you have, it assesses the risk, and then it's also a questionnaire that you go through to assess your own risk. Well, it turns out their risk score was 4 when their portfolio was 7. So their portfolio was certainly a lot more aggressive than what they considered a risk tolerance level that they were both comfortable with, even though, once again, Lucas always thought of himself as an aggressive investor. What was important to both of them? Protecting their nest egg. They did not want to go through another downturn like they did in 2007 to 2009, where they lost more than half their portfolio. Saving for retirement and also paying colleges, but also minimizing taxes, especially with Lucas's promotion. Essential budget was roughly about $146,000. Discretionary was $97,000, and total expenses $243,000. Lucas's salary was $225,000. Anna's salary was $90,000. They had surplus income of about $72,000. They figured in retirement, they would probably move, sell the big house, move down to roughly about a budget of $86,000, more travel. So the budget would drop by almost $100,000 to $163,000. Their Social Security at that time would be estimated to be $56,000. Anna's pension would be about $45,000. There would be a shortfall of $62,000. Their primary residence right now had a value of over $600,000. Lucas's retirement was $630,000. Anna had about $265,000. And then they had about almost a quarter of $1 million that they held personally. So they are on a good start in saving for retirement, in the sense that they have over $1.1 million in assets, and they still have 20 years of accumulating assets until they retire. Liabilities on the mortgage on the house, $310,000. A couple of things that we're looking at is, once again, the discrepancy between their own risk tolerance and where their portfolio was, because they were concerned with the Fed rate raising cycle. They did not want to go through another downturn like they did in 2008 and 9, where they lost more than half of their retirement assets. So we had a couple competing goals as well, not only saving for retirement, but also with two kids on the horizon entering into college with their oldest son entering college in the fall. And of course, lowering taxes. So how would the new tax law affect them? We took a look at where their taxes would be under the old tax system. And basically, their federal taxes were $97,053, including all taxes combined. Under the new tax law, their taxes would go down to $90,000. So they roughly save, under the new tax law, $6,339. They were a little bit concerned about losing and not being able to deduct their state taxes, but the tax rates were lower. So overall, their taxes dropped by $6,300. We recommended that Lucas and Anna utilize tax loss harvesting in order to reduce the impacts on capital gains because we wanted to make changes in their portfolio. We wanted to get rid of their losers and get them in a more risk-tolerant portfolio that would match the risk tolerance. And we also told them, look, sooner or later, we're going into a recession. We're going into a bear market. And, you know, we're going to have to make some changes if you don't want to go through what you went through in 2008 and 9. We also advised them to max out their contributions in the case of Anna, the 403B plan at the school system. And they also had an optional plan. And then also for Lucas, basically, he could put away $18,000 in a 401k plan. And of course, when they turn age 50, he would be able to increase that by another $6,000. We also recommended that they focus on repositioning their investments for tax efficiency, especially getting rid of some of the things that they had in their portfolio that were creating a lot of unnecessary capital gains. With he would always get walloped at the end of the year with his mutual funds because, as you know, mutual funds, if they take capital gains, they have to declare that. They usually do that between October and November. And of course, in a bull market, he would always get these big surprises. For college, we advise them to utilize a bond ladder to cover future anticipated expenses. And we also talked about using a public university and also a junior college to minimize costs because we had two competing goals. One was to accumulate enough assets for retirement, and the other one was to put two kids through college. And we talked to them about our 2+2 program. And fortunately, you know, both their children right now didn't have any specific plans like, hey, I'm going to go to Harvard. I'm going to go to medical school. I'm going to go to UC Davis for engineering or something like that. And so we talked about the 2+2, which could keep their costs down to roughly under $40,000 for each one of their children, which was certainly doable given their excess income. So, John, this is one case where we're using trying to protect not only the assets for the next bear market and recession, but also utilize tax efficiency when it came to not only saving for college, but also putting away money in their retirement plan and using that efficiently.
And again, on the program tomorrow, Paul Horn from Financial Sense Advisors is Jim's guest, looking at real estate investment from a retirement perspective. It will be interesting to see how well these tax changes affect the economy in the long run for this year, as well as at the elections. We have elections coming up this year. But anything else we're looking forward to in the weeks to come?
Yeah, we're going to do a couple of special programs on college because it's not too far. June is coming up. And so junior may be graduating from high school and you're looking at college expenses. So we're going to take a look at our 2+2 program and show you a couple case studies, how it made a difference. In the case of the Lucases, this made a major difference in terms of resolving the conflict between saving for college for their kids and wanting them to get a good college education, and at the same time, being able to reach their retirement goals because they were ahead of the game right now because they were good savers, and both of them made a high level of income, over $300,000 between the two of them. So we're going to talk about college and some unique ways to pay for it, and then I want to do a special on estate planning because this new tax law really outdated a lot of the trust and estate plans that are out there. We'll have an expert on the program and we're going to talk about some things you need to be doing if you are Larry Lotsabucks, you have a large estate, you have a business that may be illiquid, and we're going to cover some of those issues on the program in the weeks ahead, as well as college planning. All that coming up in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.